American woman. It's the Kim Munson Show. Analyzing the most important stories.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
And welcome to the Kim Munson Show. Merry Christmas to each and every one of you. It is Christmas week, one of my most favorite times of the year. This Christmas is different than some of the Christmases in the past. We have all kinds of government force telling us what we can do, can't do, who we can see, whether or not we can go to church. I never would have dreamed that we would be in this position. But we look at these issues, my friends, as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Ultimately, socialism comes down to force. And if something is a good idea, you should not have to force people to do that. So be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there as well. And you can email me there at kim@kimmunson.com also. And producer Steve, did you want to jump in here? I always like to say thank you to this team I get to work with. That's producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie. Merry Christmas to you.
Well, thank you. I can't believe this week is upon us. This was a tortured year. And maybe right now this is in spite of all the other things that are happening, it is truly a bright spot. But I was just thinking, what I got a chuckle here is when you said that if something really is a good idea, you shouldn't have to force people to do it. And, you know, that almost says that a certain governor really hasn't had a good idea yet.
Well, I think if I want to say think about the word Grinch, I have a number of politicians' faces that actually come forward on that. But this is, as we look forward to Christmas, and this is the birth of our Savior, who came to earth as a baby in a manger. It is a remarkable story that he wants to have a relationship with each and every one of us and wants to make us holy. And we'll be talking about a lot of different things this week. Special shows. Today we'll be talking with Ben Martin, patriotic historian and former Army Ranger, has a deep understanding of our American heritage. We'll be talking about Lincoln today. And then tomorrow, Dr. Alan Gelzo will talk about the American mind. On Wednesday, the Battle of the Bulge. The Battle of the Bulge in World War II was raging right around Christmas time, and I thought it would be good for us to remember those soldiers. And on Thursday, we'll be talking with Chris Stefanik. He is with Real Life Catholic about the meaning of Christmas. And then on Friday, Bill Federer, you know him. He is the founder, the creator of the American Minute. We'll talk about Washington, again, over Christmas time. And that would be crossing the Delaware and the Battle of Trenton and the Battle of Princeton. So a great week planned for you.
You're going to have...
And Steve.
I am.
He does a lot of great work, and he's a good friend of the Kim Munson Show. And I wanted to make sure that I say thank you to each and every one of you listeners. You're treasured. You're valued. You have a purpose. Strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. Our quote for today, we're going to be talking about Lincoln and some of the very serious things that he did. He had many serious speeches, but he was also a really funny guy. And you know him, he was an American statesman and a lawyer. He served as the 16th president of the United States from 1861 to 1865. He led us through the American Civil War, and he was born in 1809. He died in 1865, and a lot of people don't know how funny he was. And this is one of his quotes. I thought it was appropriate during a time where we're taking Christmas pictures. He said, "There are no bad pictures. That's just how your face looks sometimes, Steve."
That doesn't really help me because I'm in my whatever decade I'm in, fifth or sixth decade, and I have yet to take a good picture. So I'm not really, that's not really encouraging. But what is it with certain politicians? I mean, I don't know that you can put them on the same shelf, or maybe you can or you can't. Winston Churchill also had a great sense of humor. So these great politicians, noteworthy politicians, and their awesome sense of humor, just baffling.
I think part of it, Steve, is that they understand our humanity. Instead of being politicians, they really weren't politicians. They were people that had a deep appreciation for everyday people. And not only did they stand up for them and they fought with perseverance and they fought because of these high ideals, but I think they also understood the humor of everyday people, of the lives that we live. And that's one of the things with the left of 2020 America.
No sense of humor.
There is no sense of humor. And my gosh, if you can't laugh at yourself and if you can't laugh at others, that's a pretty not fun life. I'll just put it that way.
What was one of Churchill's? I mean, he had, if you go looking for him, there are lots of them, but the one that sticks in my mind is he was on his way somewhere and going from a building to his car, and a woman standing in the crowd who was not one of his fans said, "You know, if you were my husband, I'd poison your drink." And he said, "Well, madam, if you were my wife, I would drink it." You know.
And actually, I think it was Lady Astor.
Oh, was it?
It was Lady Astor.
Sorry.
Yes.
I need to get better at my storytelling.
Well, there's so many different stories out there to tell. But Lincoln was a great storyteller, but he was also able to be so succinct. And today, when we talk with Ben, we'll be talking about the Emancipation Proclamation. And I'm excited to talk with him about that because there's kind of a lot of misconstrued things about that. And then, of course, the Gettysburg Address, which is only 270 words, and his second inaugural address, and then the 13th Amendment, a man with a good sense of humor, but also he had a deep understanding of these big ideas, Steve.
Yes, every time, you know, whether it's every July, we go and cover the Battle of Gettysburg, July 1st, I think it is. And
1st through the 3rd, yeah.
Yes. And, I mean, whenever I hear the name Lincoln, I automatically go to Gettysburg in my head because, to me, that's where it all came down. The Gettysburg Address was just phenomenal.
It really was. And Lincoln said that we really, if America fails, it will not be because of somebody coming from the outside, but that actually it is because we would somehow destroy ourselves. We're seeing a big challenge right now. And as we reflect on this Christmas season, we are Americans. And I do believe that we will persevere through this because the blood of the patriots pulses through our veins as well. And so anyway, it's just going to be a really special week that we have planned this week for you. And before we go to break, one of our great sponsors is Hooters Restaurants. And my friends, it has been so difficult for our restaurants and our bars and our taverns with these rules where politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties are picking winners and losers, which businesses are essential, which aren't. I question, how is it that we can be elbow to elbow at the post office, but yet we can't go to meet friends at a bar or a restaurant or a tavern? And so during this holiday season, I'd really appreciate it if you would support my great sponsors that bring this show to you. And Hooters Restaurants is one of those. They have 5 locations: Loveland, Aurora, Lone Tree, Westminster, and Colorado Springs. And as you may be getting together with friends or family, it would be great to just pick up some Hooters great wings or some of their great fish and chips to go. For more information, go to HootersColorado.com. That's HootersColorado.com. And we will be right back with Ben Martin.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lauren Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show, and Merry Christmas to each and every one of you. It is Christmas week, and we've got amazing shows planned for you each week. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And while you're at the website, sign up for our weekly newsletter. As I mentioned, this week we're going to have very special shows. Today, our guest is Ben Martin. He is a patriotic historian, a former Army Ranger, and he has such a love for our history. And these shows are brought to you by the Harris family. I am so grateful to them for their partnership in doing so. And all this year, we've talked about the important speeches and documents of our American founding. Today, we'll continue on with Lincoln, talk about the Emancipation Proclamation, the Gettysburg Address, his second inaugural address, and the 13th Amendment. Ben Martin, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Kim. I'm so happy to be here today and talking about the things that we always talk about. And as you talked earlier, this is about Lincoln again. Our presentation is the third and the last in this series focused on Abraham Lincoln. And as you said, you already talked about the things that we're going to go through, and we'll begin today with our last presentation ended after the first inauguration on 4 March 1861. And go forward through the early years, as we saw, of the Civil War, to his original thoughts, and then the initiation, as you said, of the Emancipation Proclamation, and the issuance of his final version on 1 January 1863. And then after that, you know, focusing on the Gettysburg Address, the second inaugural, as you said, and finally the 13th Amendment. So we'll start with the Emancipation Proclamation, and before the start of the American Civil War, Lincoln, as well as many people and leaders of the North, had been primarily concerned with stopping the extension of slavery into the Western territories that would eventually achieve statehood within the Union. And we've talked about that in our previous programs. And with the secession of the Southern states and the consequential start of the Civil War, however, the continued tolerance of Southern slavery by Northerners seemed no longer to serve any constructive political purpose. So, as we discussed in our last presentation, after Lincoln had been elected as the 16th President of the United States in November of 1860, and before he was inaugurated on 4 March of 1861, 7 states of the Deep South had already seceded from the Union. He was aware of the tensions, and he attempted to calm those tensions and allay the fears of the Southern states with the conciliatory but firm nature of his first inaugural address. And those things that we talked about a little bit last time, I'm just going to highlight those, that he said at the start that apprehension seems to exist among the people of the Southern states, and that by a cession of the Republican administration, their property and their peace and their personal security are to be endangered. And he said firmly, I have no purpose, directly or indirectly, to interfere with the institution of slavery in the states where it already exists. I believe I have no lawful right to do so, and I have no inclination to do so.
Now, Ben,
go ahead.
Well, a quick question on that. We always think that Lincoln was totally against slavery. Here he's sounding like he's not going to do anything about slavery in the Southern states. I find that so interesting.
Well, he has to, you know, the first thing that you have to know about Lincoln in this speech really talks to that is that he believes in, and that was the verse, he says, I believe in the Constitution, and I have to do it. He says, I shall take care, as the Constitution itself itself expressly enjoins me upon me that the laws of the Union be faithfully executed in all the states. In doing this, he said, there needs to be no bloodshed or violence, and there shall be none unless it be forced upon the national authority, the federal government. He said, my countrymen, one and all, think calmly and well upon this whole subject. Nothing valuable can be lost by taking time. It is in your hands, my dissatisfied fellow countrymen, and not in mine, is the momentous issue of civil war. The government will not assail you. You can have no conflict without being yourself the aggressor. And then those wonderful words that he says, you have no oath registered in heaven to destroy the government. Well, I shall have the most solemn one to preserve, protect, and defend it. So he's telling them right away, very firmly, but also in a conciliatory manner. He says, I'm here, and this is my oath. But he says, we are not going to attack you. It's up to you. You know, we are not going to assail you. We will not take your property. We will not threaten your personal security. He said, but we will defend ourselves if you assail us, if you become the aggressor. And so he wants to reassure them. And so despite the reassuring words of Lincoln's first inaugural, the South did not think calmly and well upon the whole subject. In a little over a month's time, they initiated the conflict as aggressors at Fort Sumter, South Carolina, which was the beginning of the American Civil War.
Wow.
So, he's trying. And he's telling them at the time, you know, I don't have any authority to do that. Not as long as we're at peace. Lincoln is a very smart guy, and he knows. He knows what the people feel. He feels the same kind of things. He detests slavery, as is said in all of his speeches. But he can only go so far as the leader of the country. He does not want to start the Civil War. He does not want to separate the Union. And so through most of the early part of the war, the Union military was not very successful when confronting the Confederates on the battlefield. And while in the nation's capital, the government was making gains. So they were being unsuccessful on the battlefield, but he was making gains. And so we start with the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850, when we talked about the 1850 compromise earlier in one of our programs. And that was a few presentations ago. And we required that runaway slaves be returned to their owners. But early in the Civil War, Union generals like Benjamin Butler declared that slaves in the Confederate-occupied areas were contraband of war, and they refused to return them. This is the Union generals, refused to return them to their owners like they were supposed to because of the Fugitive Act, Slave Act. He said, no, they're contraband now, and they're to be kept. So that's the first thing that happened. So on the 13th of March, 1862, Congress approved a law enacting an additional article of war, which forbid Union officers to return fugitive slaves to their owners. So that was in March of 1862. Then in April of 1862, Lincoln signed a law that abolished slavery in the District of Columbia, and the slave owners were compensated for the slaves. On 19 June, now this is a couple months later, still 1862, Congress passed another law that prohibited slavery in all of the current and future U.S. territories, and President Lincoln quickly signed it. Additionally, this act repudiated the 1857 Dred Scott case, which we've already talked about, which decided that Congress was powerless to regulate slavery in the U.S. territories. So he repudiated that by this act, and it also rejected Stephen Douglas's notion of popular sovereignty. So I'm saying, even though they're losing on the battlefield, he's making progress in the national government here. And so then in July, Congress passed and Lincoln signed again quickly into law the Confiscation Act of 1862, which contained provisions for liberating slaves held by rebels it stated that all slaves of persons who shall hereafter be engaged in rebellion against the government of the United States would be permanently freed. So he did that. Those are acts that he could do because, you know, that we didn't have any people that were opposing that in the government anymore. They had already they had withdrawn.
They'd left.
Seceded. Yeah, uh-huh. They had left. So also in July, Lincoln first discussed the Emancipation Proclamation with his cabinet. He first drafted his preliminary proclamation and read it to the Secretary of State, William Seward, and the Secretary of the Navy, Gideon Welles, who, after hearing it, were both speechless. So this is early in July. And then on the 22nd of July, Lincoln read it to his whole cabinet. This time, Seward advised Lincoln to issue the proclamation after a major Union victory, or else it would appear as if the Union was giving its last shriek of retreat. So in September, the Confederates made a strong push to invade the North through Maryland. And on 17 September 1862, the Union forces under the command of General McClellan clashed with the Confederate forces under the command of General Lee at the Battle of Antietam, or the Battle of Sharpsburg, as it's sometimes called, in what was the bloodiest one-day battle in U.S. history, with almost 23,000 casualties, dead, wounded, or missing.
Wow.
Although the Union suffered more losses, they fought gallantly and held the field as the Confederates withdrew. This gave Lincoln the victory, and it wasn't really a strong victory, he needed to issue the Emancipation. It was almost a fight to a draw. But it was very important, and he used that to issue the preliminary Emancipation Proclamation. And again, that was on 22 September, 5 days after the battle. Lincoln called his cabinet together and issued that preliminary Emancipation Proclamation. Lincoln told the cabinet that he made a covenant with God, and that if the Union drove the Confederates out of Maryland, he would issue the Emancipation Proclamation, and he did. The proclamation was issued in two parts. The first part was the one that he's issuing now on 22 September 1862, was a preliminary announcement outlining the intent of the second part, which officially went into effect 100 days later on 1 January 1863. Whoa, how convenient, huh? During the second year of the Civil War, it was Lincoln's declaration that all slaves would be permanently freed in all areas of the Confederacy that had not already returned to federal control by January of 1863.
So, Ben, what he is once again doing is he is offering them an opportunity to come back into the fold, if you will. And I think that's brilliant. That's one of the brilliance of Lincoln.
That was really brilliant because it was a military necessity. Now, he could not take away slavery in the states where it already existed, but these people had left the Union, and now they're fighting the Union, and they're using slaves to their advantage. So he can do this out of military necessity as the commander-in-chief and the special war powers that he has. And he said this, they chose to disregard it, and I made the preemptive proclamation on what appears to me to be a military necessity, and being made, it must stand. So the results of that Emancipation Proclamation, which had been ridiculed for, and we've heard that before in current time, freeing only the slaves over which the Union had no power. These slaves were freed due to Lincoln's war powers, and the act, these are the things that it accomplished. The act cleared up the issue of contraband slaves. It automatically clarified the status of over 100,000 now former slaves. They were freed, and they understood that by this proclamation. And then they say that, you know, on the first day, it freed from 20,000 to 50,000 slaves on the day that it went into effect. In every Confederate state, the proclamation went into immediate effect in the Union-occupied areas. This proclamation provided for the emancipation of nearly all of the 4 million slaves over the course of the war. Hearing the proclamation, more slaves quickly escaped to the Union lines as the Army units moved south, the Union Army moved south. The Emancipation Proclamation also allowed for the enrollment of freed slaves into the U.S. military. During the war, nearly 200,000 blacks joined the Union Army. Their contributions gave the North additional manpower that was significant in winning the war. Slaves had been part of the engine of war for the Confederacy. They had produced and prepared food, sewed uniforms, repaired railways, worked on farms and in factories, shipping yards and mines, built fortifications, and served as hospital workers and common laborers. News of the proclamation spread rapidly, encouraging thousands to escape to the Union lines. And in August of 1863 letter, President Lincoln received from General Grant observed that a proclamation combining the usage of black soldiers by the U.S. Army profoundly angered the Confederacy, saying the emancipation of the Negroes, this is what Grant said, is the heaviest blow yet given to the Confederacy. As wow. Lincoln had hoped, the proclamation turned foreign popular opinions to the favor of the unions by gaining the support of the anti-slavery countries and the countries that had already abolished slavery, especially the developed countries in Europe, such as UK and France. This shift ended Confederate hopes of gaining official recognition. So by listing all those things, want to dissuade us from believing that this had no effect at all and it was just a joke. It was what some of the people had said, that they were freeing only the slaves over which the Union had no power. This freed all of the slaves over the time that it was in effect.
Wow.
So I think it was very, very effective and a very smart move on President Lincoln's part.
Yes, very smart. We're going to go to break, Ben Martin. I think that's an excellent understanding of the Emancipation Proclamation. We have some other very important speeches that we want to talk about. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with Ben Martin. Hey, Jason McBride over at Presidential Wealth Management. You know, one of the things that I have so much passion for is our World War II veterans. In fact, I have this World War II project and have had the great honor to interview over 100 World War II veterans. They were pretty smart guys.
Well, they sure were. And, you know, investing can be like a war sometimes. You have to have strategy. You have to be ready for the unexpected. George S. Patton had a very good quote that I think could apply to investing as well. And he said, if everybody is thinking alike, then somebody isn't thinking. And I think that that kind of talks to what you see in the market sometimes is the herd mentality, which tends to happen near the tops, when everybody is starting to plow into the same stocks, the same investments. They're the only, everybody's talking about it on TV, on the cable networks. In fact, there's been a study that if your company gets featured like on the front of Time magazine as the greatest thing ever, that's the top. I think it happened with Amazon back before it crashed in the internet boom. Enron was called the greatest thing ever right before it fell down, and there have been other examples. So sometimes if everything just seems to be going too great and everyone is talking about a certain investment, whether that be gold or a stock or Apple or Bitcoin, maybe everybody's already put their money in there and there's no buying power left to come in and push the price higher.
So that quote by George Patton, if everybody is thinking alike, then somebody isn't thinking, that really makes a lot of sense, Jason McBride.
I think it does, just on a gut and fundamental level, and that's the kind of quotes I like.
I like them as well. So if you would like another set of eyes on your nest egg, the men and women over at Presidential Wealth Management can certainly give you another set of eyes. And Jason McBride, thanks so much. We will talk to you tomorrow.
All right, Kim, have a good show.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show, and Merry Christmas to each and every one of you. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can sign up for our weekly newsletter there, and you can email me at kimmunson.com as well. This show is brought to you by the Harris family. So grateful for their sponsorship of this. And on the line with me is Ben Martin. He is a patriotic historian, a former Army Ranger, and we are going through the important speeches and documents of our American founding. In the last segment, we talked about the importance of the Emancipation Proclamation that Lincoln issued. Now let's talk about the Gettysburg Address. Not very many words, but so powerful, Ben Martin.
You're right. So, Kim, in the early days of July of 1863, two major battles of the American Civil War were concluded. Both were tremendous and much-needed victories for the Union Army, which hadn't been doing so well in the battlefield. One was in the Western Theater of the War on the high set bluffs overlooking the Mississippi River in a town and the surrounding area of Vicksburg, Mississippi. The other battlefield is in the Eastern Theater, in the fields surrounding the town of Gettysburg. The battle for Vicksburg was more accurately a siege, which lasted for approximately 1.5 months and ended on 4 July as a victory for the Union. In contrast, the battle in Gettysburg lasted 3 days and ended on 3 July. On these fields surrounding Gettysburg, more Americans have died in battle than anywhere else on earth, as both battlefield cemeteries have been built and dedicated and are filled with bodies of the fallen soldiers of both sides. In Gettysburg, approximately 4.5 months after the battle, the dedication of the cemetery was scheduled to occur. The featured speaker that day was not President Lincoln, but Edward Everett, a very accomplished man and considered by many as the greatest orator in America at the time. He was to deliver the Gettysburg Address. President Lincoln, on the other hand, was to give a brief dedicatory remarks after Everett's featured speech. Everett's speech was approximately 14,000 words,
oh my gosh,
while Abraham Lincoln's was 270 words. Everett spoke for more than 2 hours, while Lincoln's speech was more than 2 minutes. Yet Lincoln's speech is the one remembered as the Gettysburg Address, and it's considered one of the most famous speeches in American history. So we're going to go through those 271 words here really quickly. 67 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who gave their lives here that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men living and dead who struggled here have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here. but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead, we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. And that was the end of the speech. And at the end of Lincoln's speech, Everett remarked to Lincoln, and this is a quote, "I wish that I could flatter myself that I had come as near to the central idea of the occasion in 2 hours as you did in 2 minutes."
I just had chills. I just had chills. And my understanding, it may be of one of the classes that I took that you taught, that Lincoln, there's no photograph of Lincoln giving the speech. The photographer wanted to change the lighting, and so took his camera down and was moving to get better lighting. And by the time he got his camera set up, the speech was done. Don't you find that amazing?
That is amazing. But, you know, they sat there for 2 hours and where the sun was right, but the sun moves, as you know.
Right.
And then, so they
in November,
the camera. And by the time he got it over there, the speech was already finished. And so that was amazing. So from there we go from November of 1863, we go to March of 1865, and Lincoln has won his second presidential race, and so he's given his second inaugural. And so, and this is one of those speeches that some people say was more important than any other speech that he ever gave. But, you know, and there's arguments back and forth. But we will talk about this. While many Americans are familiar with Gettysburg Address, not quite so many, maybe not even close, are familiar with his second inaugural address. It, like Gettysburg Address, is rather short, but also very profound, full of deep and meaningful content. It is the second shortest inaugural address in the U.S. history. The shortest inaugural was delivered by President Washington at the occasion of his second inauguration. So Inauguration Day was 4 March of 1865, as we said, is not what one would call a Chamber of Commerce day. The morning sky has been as dark as the evening. The rain has been torrential, and the winds have been fiercely howling. The unpaved streets in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, had become rivers of mud. Yet everyone seemed excited to be present for the ceremony. There was a buzz on the streets in the crowd. Most are relieved that the victory in the war appears certain and near. The crowds are wondering, what will the president say? Will he blast the South for the slavery and the war they caused? Will he cheer the North for victory? What are his plans for the conquered South? Everyone is hushing now. The president is making his way forward. He mounts the podium, moves to the lectern, and begins to speak. And miraculously, the wind and the rain stop, and the sun breaks through the dark clouds, and they begin to dissipate. Is this an omen? It certainly is a blessing. And so this is what he says, and this is a very short version of that very short speech. As this second oath of the office, there is less need for an extended address than at the first. With high hopes for the future, no prediction as to the outcome of the war is ventured. On this occasion 4 years ago, all thoughts were anxiously directed to an impending civil war. Both sides deprecated war, but one of them would make war rather than let the nation survive, while the other would accept war rather than let the nation perish. 1/8 of us are colored slaves, a peculiar and powerful entrance that was somehow the cause of the war. neither party expected the war's great magnitude or duration. Both sides read the same Bible and pray to the same God. The prayers of both could not be answered. The Almighty has his own purposes. If American slavery is one of those offenses he wills to remove, and that he gives to both North and South this terrible war as a woe due to those by whom the offense came. Finally do we hope, fervently do we pray, that this mighty scourge of war will speedily pass away. Yet if God wills it to continue, as did the bondsman's, the slave master's, 250 years of unrequited toil, until every drop of blood drawn with the lash shall be paid by another drawn with the sword, so still it must be said that the judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. With malice toward none, with charity for all, with a firmness in the right as God gives us to see the right, let us strive on to finish the work that we are in, to bind the nation's wounds, to care for him who shall have borne the battle, and for his widow and his orphan, to do all which may achieve and cherish a just and lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations. And just like that, that speech was over. The crowd was stunned. They reflected for a while and then burst into cheers. Lincoln did not applaud the North nor upbraid the South. He said the whole nation was guilty, and he pleaded for reconciliation, just like he had at his first inauguration. So in 41 days after this, Lincoln will die. But his powerful homily will never die. In it, neither vindictiveness nor triumphalism is present. At the bedrock, at the very bedrock, is Lincoln's humility and magnanimity. And that's the second inauguration.
Wow. Ben Martin. Again, I just got chills just because these words are so powerful. We're going to go to break. This is Kim Munson. On the line with me is Ben Martin, patriotic historian, former Army Ranger, expert on Lincoln. And we're talking about the important speeches and documents of our American founding. The show is brought to you by the Harris family, and certainly really appreciate that. And before we go to break, wanted to give a shout out to another just great partner of mine, and that is Castlegate Knife and Tool, located right here in Sedalia, Colorado. It is the place to do your Christmas shopping this week. They have knives from the best blade makers from throughout the world. So whether or not you're looking for a gift for a collector or a sportsman, a new kitchen knife set, a utility knife, Castlegate Knife and Tool is the place to go. They also have a really cool new array of watches as well. So go to castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. We will be right back with Ben Martin.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, kimmunson.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Hark how the bells, sweet silver bells, all seem to say, throw cares away, Christmas is here, bringing good cheer.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Merry Christmas to each and every one of you. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And while you're at the website, be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter. This is the final segment today with Ben Martin. You know him. He is a patriotic historian, a former Army Ranger, just steeped in American history, an expert on Lincoln. And we've been going through the important speeches and documents of America's founding. And of course, Lincoln is pivotal in all of that. We talked today about the Emancipation Proclamation, the Gettysburg Address, the second inaugural address. And let's finish this up. This is actually concluding all that we've been doing this year on the show. And let's talk about the 13th Amendment and then just some of the parallels of what's happening in America today. So, Ben, what about the 13th Amendment?
Ah, the 13th Amendment. Well, you know that President Lincoln, as we talked about in his second inaugural, he died 41 days after that inaugural address. But, you know, the 13th Amendment was so important to him because he wanted to make sure that that got done. And so he was pushing very hard for that through the people that were making the laws in the Congress. And so the 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution outlaws slavery and involuntary servitude, except as punishment for a crime, as most of us know. It was passed by the Senate on the 8th day of April in 1864, and by the House on 31 January 1865, and then sent to the people for ratification, to the states. And they adopted it. They had ratified it by 6 December 1865. So Lincoln had already perished, but they fought to make sure that this was passed, and they knew this was Lincoln's desire. So when people talk about, you know, Lincoln didn't really want to free the slaves, and in some of the things that he said those things to keep the country, the Union together, and to keep moving along. But the whole time, he had a plan. And the plan came to fruition on 18 December of 1865, when the Secretary of State, William Seward, proclaimed it to be adopted by the state. And it was the first of the three Reconstruction Amendments adopted after the American Civil War. And when the 13th Amendment was proposed, there had been no new amendments to the Constitution adopted in more than 60 years. So it was pretty significant. Mm-hmm. And President Lincoln and the other Republicans were concerned at the time that the Emancipation Proclamation, which we talked about before, which in 1863 declared the freedom of slaves in the Confederate states then in rebellion, would be seen as a temporary war measure since it was based solely on Lincoln's war powers. The proclamation did not abolish slavery. It freed the slaves in those states that were in rebellion. But because of this, Lincoln and other supporters believed that an amendment to the Constitution was needed. And so therefore comes the 13th Amendment in the National Archives. Today it sits. And it bears the signature of Abraham Lincoln when he signed it, when they sent it out to be, after it had been approved by the two houses of Congress, when he sent it out to the states, he actually, as the president, signed it. And so that signed, that fine parchment is still in the National Archives today with his signature on it. The text of it is there's two sections to it. It's pretty simple. And section one says, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime, whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. And the second part is, Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. So that is the 13th Amendment. It's pretty well put together. That was the fruition. You know, Lincoln wanted to keep the Union together. That was important. He wanted to set the Constitution in the way that the founders had envisioned it, with the principles of the Declaration of Independence, and that all people in America, that were our citizens, were free, you know, and they had those inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So that's very important. And we look at what Lincoln was doing. to do all of those things that he did. And it's very, very important what he did and the perseverance that he had to have through all that. It was just like today. The crisis we're having seems overwhelming, but and it was even more overwhelming to Lincoln at the time because he was having to fight the Civil War, a war in which we lost, we had more American casualties, more deaths, more wounds than we had had in any other war that we've ever fought. And so he was going through this. He had people on both sides, some telling him, you got to push harder for freeing the slaves. And then other people were saying, no, you can't push that hard. And at the same time, he's fighting a war. He's trying to get a good general in there that will prosecute the war. And he finally finds finally finds Grant and Sherman, and they work well together to finish the war off. But it was all that stuff. And so when we talk about this, we go back to when Lincoln, we talk about it when he did that Lyceum speech, when he was still a young man. He wasn't even 30 years old yet, all the way back to 1838, one of his first speeches. And he says, you know, we find ourselves under the government of a system of political institutions conducing more essentially to the ends of civil and religious liberty than any of which the history of former times tells us. Pretty big statement. Mm-hmm. And he says, when we are mounting the stage of existence, we find ourselves the legal inheritors of these fundamental blessings. He said, we toil not in their acquirement or the establishment of them. They are a legacy bequeathed us by a once hardy, brave, and patriotic group of ancestors. He said, theirs was a task, and nobly they performed it. And he said, all we have to do, we possess this goodly land. And he says, all we have to do, 'tis ours only to transmit these, the political edifice of liberty, unprofaned by the foot of an invader, and our principle of equal rights, undecayed by the lapse of time, and untorn by usurpation, to the latest generation that fate shall permit the world to know. So he talks about this, and he said, this great task of transmitting our political edifice of liberty and equal rights, unprofaned nor undecayed, to our posterity is a task of gratitude to those who came before us, a task of justice to ourselves, a task of duty to our sons and our daughters, a task of love for our species in general. All of these imperatively require us faithfully to perform. And then he says, how shall we perform it? At what point shall we expect the approach of danger? And then he says, at what point then is the approach of danger to be expected? He says, I answer, if ever it reach us, it must spring up amongst us. It cannot come from abroad. If destruction be our lot, we must ourselves be its author and finisher. As a nation of free men, we must live through all time or die by suicide. And that so much speaks of what is happening now. We're destroying ourselves by this. If we let this stand, you know, we may never be able to get it back again. And he says, the question recurs, how shall we fortify against it? The answer is simple. Let every American, every lover of liberty, every well-wisher to his posterity, those that come behind us, swear by the blood of the Revolution never to violate in the least particular the laws of the country and never to tolerate this violation by others. And that goes to back to his first inauguration. When he says he will not violate, or he cannot violate, he doesn't have the authority to violate the Constitution. And Ben, go ahead.
Well, Ben Martin, we're just about out of time. I think you're finishing up with your final thought on this. This has been such a great set of shows this year. Thank you. Your final thought.
Welcome. My final thought is what he said in a Cooper Union address at the end of that. Very famous and very important speech, too. He said, let us have faith that right makes might. And in that faith, let us to the end, dare to do our duty as we understand it.
And it is our time, Ben Martin. We stand on the shoulders of giants. We have been given a great heritage, and we need to step up here. I so appreciate this, and one of the things is to make sure that we understand our heritage. Thank you to the Harris family for bringing these shows to you. Ben Martin, I wish to you a very Merry Christmas and a happy 2021. Thank you for all you do.
You too. Thank you so much, Kim. I always enjoy this, and I thank the Harris family too. Thank you.
You bet. And our quote for today, I'm going to go back. You heard it once during the show, but once again, in the second inaugural address, Lincoln says, "With malice toward none, with charity for all, with firmness in the right as God gives us to see the right, let us strive on to finish the work we are in, to bind up the nation's wounds, to care for him who shall have borne the battle, and for his widow and his orphan, to do all which may achieve and cherish a just and lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations." And my friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. And God bless you, God bless America, and Merry Christmas.